This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. It is Travel Tuesday. Is now a good time to buy airfares? Are there deals out there for many months ahead of time? Also, a lot of people working from home, spouses often working from home now. How to navigate that with your relationship intact? Right now, let's get all the latest on COVID-19. A little guarded optimism in New York. Michelle Cortez is here. She is a health reporter at Bloomberg News based in Minneapolis. Michelle, what is the latest that we're hearing out of New York?
So things are plateauing in New York. It does seem like we're having fewer cases for the third day in a row. So that's great news. There's also good news in that ICU cases and the need for ventilators has dropped a little bit. So Mayor de Blasio there is very excited about that, the idea that they're going to get a little bit of a respite. But not all good news. Deaths were really high again in New York, also in the UK. So we are definitely not through. Bad things are still to come.
And is there, because I think a lot of people are hearing this and they're thinking, all right, you know, we've turned the corner. Louisiana has said the same thing, that they think they may have seen the plateau. It's, I think, making people think, hey, we're going to be able to go outside soon. We're going to be able to go back to normal soon. But is all of this happening in large part because of the social distancing, the stay-at-home orders?
Right. Well, that's exactly what is happening. The social distancing and the stay-at-home orders has prevented the virus from spreading. We're learning more and more that the virus is pretty fragile, and these efforts to interfere with its transmission work really well. But what that means by definition is that everybody out there is still vulnerable to the virus. So should you get in contact with it, you are at risk for picking up the virus. Interestingly, Wuhan has now opened up again, and they're starting to try to get back to their regular economy. So we'll be able to watch and see how it works there as well.
And when it comes to then down the line, the fact is for several months until there's a vaccine or some sort of an antiviral drug, it's going to be dangerous to lift these stay-at-home orders and get people again congregating.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if it's dangerous or not. I mean, like, theoretically, there's so many unanswered questions. If we get into this warmer weather, just it's a coronavirus, like the common cold, you could see some dissipation. Not everybody warns that it's not going to go away. It's not going to be some mysterious, you know, magical thing that it disappears. But it is possible that it would be less transmitted in warm weather. Certainly, we're talking about Major League Baseball opening up down in Arizona where it's warmer. So there is possibility of that happening. But again, with so many people with no protection against this virus, everybody is taking a risk. And the question is when are people going to be willing to go back outside again and run that risk for themselves?
And is that where the face mask thing, I mean, we don't, I guess, completely know whether it protects you or protects others from you. But I'm wondering if that may be, at least for a while, the new normal, a lot of people wearing those.
So many people. I was shocked out at the stores how many people had face masks on. I even put on my a scarf around my face just to protect somebody else because I was doing a little coughing yesterday. But the science is just absolutely not there. All the research we've seen, there's been nothing that shows that face masks are universally protective. So the argument is it's better than nothing. It might offer some protection. Certainly, we don't want to be infecting other people. The question is does it help and by how much? And who knows if we're ever going to get the answer to that.
Yeah, thanks so much. Yeah, you're right. Thank you. Michelle Cortez, a health reporter at Bloomberg News. Some experts believe the COVID-19 outbreak will change the global economy forever. We welcome Carl Riccadonna, chief U.S. economist at Bloomberg. He is based in New York. Carl, what kind of changes are we likely to see? What are some of the predictions?
Well, first of all, we're going to see an exceptionally severe contraction in the economy in the second quarter, possibly the worst contraction on record, going all the way back to World War II. So just volatility in the economy, sentiment towards financial markets, all of that's going to change. The expectations of what the Fed will do in a crisis will change, and also expectations for the level of interest rates. So we are now in a very low interest rate regime, whether it's mortgages, consumer loans, business lending, certificates of deposit, et cetera, we are in a low interest rate environment, which means that policymakers are going to have to revert to different types of tools in future economic downturns.
What about, we've seen this sort of battle against globalization and this interdependence of the different economies around the world. There's been a lot of pushback in a lot of elections about that. And we've seen some of the challenges in getting supplies that are made in other countries. And yet we've also had a real dependence. We kind of help each other through this. What's likely to happen there?
Well, I think that the wheels were already starting to turn in with respect to public sentiment towards international trade through the course of the trade war over the last 2 years, and now certainly with the coronavirus, we can see how quickly economic shocks can, and other types of shocks, health shocks in this case, can spread so rapidly around the globe. So I think there is some rethink happening about strategic industries like pharmaceuticals and steel production, defense equipment, et cetera, and I think if anything, this is only going to push public sentiment more in the direction of thinking that at least here in the United States, certain core industry will have to be able to survive with the domestically oriented supply chains.
Now, you touched earlier on the contraction that is likely facing not only the U.S., but really every economy all around the globe. Is that the sort of thing that we can easily ramp up from? I think there's some people who feel like we're just going to be able to go back to normal here in a matter of weeks or months.
Well, I don't think we'll be able to go back to normal. A lot of income is being lost. So certain industries, yes, they can flip the switch and come right back online, turn the assembly lines on, and maybe workers didn't get that much of a shock to their paychecks in the short term due to some of the fiscal stimulus measures or some employers able to maintain kind of bare bones operations and still issue those paychecks during the downturn. But as we saw in the last jobs report, huge dislocations happening in the labor market. And so the longer the economy is shut down, the more severe that disruption to income generation, whether it's household income or business income, becomes. And so the fiscal stimulus helps to kind of bridge some of that gap, but it doesn't completely fill it in. So I don't think we'll be looking at a V-shaped recovery in the economy. We're going to see a very steep drop down. But then I suspect that the economy will come back at a much more moderate pace in the back half of the year.
Thanks for all the analysis, Carl Riccadonna. He is chief U.S. economist at Bloomberg, based in New York. Just ahead, a lot of people working at home alongside spouses. How do you do that in this age of coronavirus without killing each other?
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The new work-at-home environment can present a challenge for people not used to doing their job at home, especially if a significant other is nearby. Let's get some help navigating this. Jessica Schaefer is joining us, senior director at LaSalle Network in Chicago. Jessica, if I understand correctly, you're engaged in this, right? You have a spouse working at home with you?
4 weeks.
Okay. How's it been going?
It's been better than I probably could have hoped for, which hopefully is the case for many of us listening to the radio today. I think we finally have it down after 4 weeks.
So what are some of the things that people can do, especially if maybe you don't have a lot of space? So it's not exactly like you can necessarily create separate spaces.
Right. That's the biggest challenge is how do you get your work done when you're in the small confines and maybe both people are on the phone and they're competing for airspace or airtime? How do you get it done? And the biggest thing is just setting expectations and being honest with your partner, saying, you know what, I'm going to need a little bit of alone time, or I'm going to need to use the office during this time. Can you find another place to work? And finding a way to meet in the middle.
Now, what about creating, again, even if you don't have a lot of space, creating these areas for work and these areas for home so that you don't get in a situation, especially if this goes on for several more weeks, where it just seems like your whole place is all about work?
Right. There's a lot of research that came out even before COVID-19 that said that you need to separate your work and your home life, which means probably not doing work from the bedroom, finding another space to work, whether it be in the kitchen or the dining room, if you have a home office, working there. But there's a lot of research that says don't be doing it from the comfort of your bed.
One of the nice things about this is a lot of couples are not necessarily able to get together for lunch. Maybe they don't work near each other. And now, I mean, you're right there. You could have a daily lunch date.
Cisco, that's definitely the silver lining. People are home, you know, I'm using air quotes, home earlier so they can cook dinner or have dinner with their spouses and their families. They can go for walks during the day. And I think that's a good way to look at it. You got to look at the upside of things.
What about creating these, I don't know if it's zones or signage or something like that. I've seen online some people that just put signs up that say, do not disturb, do not come into the room. I guess that may be wise.
Yeah, I think it's important to set boundaries and to say, you know what, I'm on a really important conference call, or I'm going to be on the radio this afternoon. I need you to take the kids or take the dogs or whomever and make yourself sparse. It's okay to say that.
And communication, you've already touched on this, but communication, just the key from the beginning of the day when you wake up all the way through the workday.
Yeah, understanding each other's schedule and saying, when are your calls? When are you busiest? When do you need me to you know, go for a walk or be outside or not be around you? Let's talk about our schedules and align them up, especially if you're taking care of children. It's even more important. You know, what are the hours of the day where you can balance the kids and work, and what are the hours that I can, and taking turns.
What about the temptation to treat your spouse like a coworker? Hey, can you do this for me? Hey, can you help me with that?
I think that's probably a recipe for a disaster for anybody who's been married for a while. I know my husband does not appreciate that. And I think it's important to draw those distinguishers and say, you know what, I need to hop on a Zoom and talk to a coworker about this, as opposed to talking to somebody who's right next to me, but who's my spouse.
Thanks very much. Good insight. Jessica Schaefer, Senior Director at LaSalle Network here in Chicago. Still ahead, Travel Tuesday. We put the focus on airfares now and after the pandemic.
News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM and WBBMNewsRadio.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Mayor Lightfoot extends help to immigrants and refugees during the COVID-19 pandemic. Travel Tuesday, where airfares are today and what they might look like in a post-coronavirus world. People struggling with their mortgages are looking for help because of the economic impact of the disease. On Wall Street, the Dow up 630 points, the NASDAQ is up 136, and the S&P is up 62 points. Oil is down right about 1.5%. Mix of sun and clouds in Chicagoland, headed to a high of 80 degrees. Right now, 72 O'Hare, 57 degrees along Chicago's lakefront. Mayor Lightfoot is extending relief aid and benefits during the coronavirus crisis to immigrants and refugees, whether legal or not. WBBM political editor Craig Delamore with the details.
The order Mayor Lightfoot signed at her news conference makes form of what she's said verbally all along. All benefits, opportunities, and services provided or administered by the city are accessible to all residents, regardless of where they were born or how they got here.
This includes the COVID-19 Housing Assistance Grant to help with housing costs for individuals and families. Online enrichment learning resources available to every student at every level, regardless of status. And the $100 million Chicago Small Business Resiliency Fund to help our neighborhood businesses.
On other matters, the mayor says Chicago has received more ventilators from the federal government, though not as many as the hospitals here need. Craig Delamore, News Radio, 105.9 FM.
Today's COVID-19 update from Indiana reveals 34 more people have died, bringing the total to 173, the largest single-day jump so far. The State Department of Health reports 568 new confirmed cases of the virus, pushing the total past 5,500. Marion County, where Indianapolis is located, has the most new cases. If you're among the many now working from home, ask your smart speaker to play WBBM News Radio for all the latest developments.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Noon Business Hour presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Markets higher again today. Let's talk about it with Michael Stritch, Chief Investment Officer at BMO Wealth Management here in Chicago. Mike, good to have you on the show. What do you make of what you're seeing today?
Thanks, Cisco, and great to be back. And I think it's just a continuation of the action we saw yesterday, which is really built on the idea that progress is being made around the world and in the U.S. on the coronavirus growth rate. So beating down sectors that had been the biggest losers in the face of all of this shutdown are now rebounding a bit, with expectation that we can maybe transition at some point over the next handful of weeks, months, to get back to work.
This is where you get some investors who are really looking for some deals, as you have some, I'm thinking some of the travel sector stocks, really, really beaten down 70%+ off of their 52-week highs, and some people are thinking they can really score.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, today, if you look at the top movers in the S&P, you're seeing companies like Kohl's, you're seeing Royal Caribbean, Carnival, all those names that have been severely beaten down. And if you think about the sectors that are outperforming, energy is the top performing sector today, another group of stocks that has severely lagged over the course of 2020, materials, financials. So really, it's the companies and the industries and the sectors that would prospectively benefit from a rebound in growth at some level, at least a better growth picture than no growth at all, which is what we've been facing here in the last few weeks.
And that is, I would guess, the case regardless of how long any kind of a recovery takes. People are betting, hey, these stocks are really cheap, and over the long run, it may take a year or two, but over the long run, I'm going to be all right here.
I think so. That's the focus for today. I mean, we would caution against being too aggressive there. Our view is we still are looking for large cap quality growth names, not really the more cyclical, call it speculative growth. Betting on a rebound, we're feeling like this is still going to be choppy for a while, and there's a lot of unknowns that need to get resolved as we transition back to work. And in that environment, you're best suited focusing on, we think, those larger cap quality growth type of names. And frankly, a lot of the names that have outperformed year-to-date 2020, underperforming a little bit today, because as you mentioned, the focus today is on some of those more speculative growth plays.
And is that, do you pay attention to those solid companies that are really expected to survive this? Because some of the others, even if they're well-known companies that have been around a long time, if there's a cash flow problem over the long run, they may not be able to ride this out, no matter how big they are.
Indeed, cash is king. And there's a huge separation between the winners and the losers here in every market, in every industry, I think. And that's a huge focus for us. And frankly, that goes for not just stocks. We think about bonds, municipal bonds, all kinds of asset classes. That's really the key sort of thing to consider today, is this idea of cash flow, stability, liquidity.
Now, let's talk about dividends, getting a little bit of cash while you're waiting here. Is that a strategy that would be effective, or is it too dangerous because we don't know who may have to cut or eliminate dividends?
Yeah, we spend a lot of time, and I think it is, dividend growth is an area we like a lot. Again, look for historical consistency, strong balance sheets. You know, again, I would probably stay away from the very cyclical companies. If I think about, that's in the energy space and others that might be forced, if they haven't already, cut dividends. But dividend growth is an area, and dividends in particular, is an area we like if you have the right set of tools to evaluate the firms. I mean, look, 10-year treasury rates sub 1%, there is a significant advantage in terms of just generating income to dividends today when the S&P yield is between 2.5% and 3%.
Does that make bank stocks a challenge for investors for a while?
I think banks are, they fall into the cyclical camp in the sense of, the banks will need a better sort of sustained economic improvement to perform well. And as you alluded to on the dividends, that's an area that we'll see how much action we get there from banks cutting dividends, but certainly it's something people are keeping an eye out for. So again, in the quality growth spectrum, there are some bank names that we like, but broadly as a sector, it's not a big area of focus for us.
Thanks so much for all the analysis. Michael Stritch, he is Chief Investment Officer at BMO Wealth Management here in Chicago. Just ahead, Travel Tuesday, where airfares are now and where they may be heading. Is now a time to book travel?
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday here on the Noon Business Hour, a tricky time to be buying airline tickets. Let's get some insight from Henry Hardeveld, travel industry analyst, founder of Atmosphere Research Group based in San Francisco. Henry, good to have you back on the show. Is one of the challenges here for buying airfares the fact that so many flights have been cut and we don't know when those flights are going to be restored?
That's correct. And right now, even the airlines aren't quite sure. They have filed schedules. They are selling tickets. But of course, everything right now is subject to change.
And so if you're someone who, say, doesn't need a flight right now, but you need it 3, 6, 9 months down the line, if you buy it now, there may be much better availability just a few months down the line.
Well, if you buy now, you're probably going to get some good availability, and there's some great deals. And something to bear in mind is that some airlines, including, of course, Chicago-based United, have created some very generous, flexible terms in terms of how you can change and manage your tickets in the future. So if you find a deal that you like, you should consider it. But just be careful. We don't know when we're going to get the all clear to travel again.
Yeah, be prepared to make changes, certainly for quite a while. And you mentioned a lot of airlines making things more flexible, which has got to be a relief not only for the passengers, but for the airlines. I mean, if they're flexible and that money stays in their coffers instead of being refunded, it's a good thing for the airlines.
It is. Now, of course, the issue is if you need that money, you may not want to give an interest-free loan to any airline or, for that matter, any company. So before you book the ticket, just make sure you're confident about the taking that trip or that you may take another trip on the airline in the future. United, for example, and Delta are both giving you up to 2 years to use travel credits.
Now, are there deals to be had? I would think that with fewer flights, the prices might be stable and there might not be as many deals. It's like supply and demand.
There are some deals that are out there. I have heard of people booking flights from the U.S. to Europe in business class for travel in the fall for roughly $2,100 round trip on some airlines.
Wow, that is a deal. And so people, I mean, should they be thinking about maybe travel that they might not ordinarily take in order to take advantage of the deal, or still just focusing on trips they have to take?
You know, you should only spend money that your budget will allow. And especially right now, I recognize that there is a lot of uncertainty over our jobs and what money we will have and so on. So never spend money irresponsibly. But if you're planning a trip somewhere, if it's a place you want to go and you're looking 6, 9 months, even a year down the road, you know, go ahead and book it if you can afford it. But just recognize you may not get the cash back. You may get a travel credit should circumstances change.
As people are getting antsy about taking advantage of the deals, is there a belief that once everything gets back to whatever the new normal is, that airfares will just skyrocket? They sort of get the deal now or never?
Generally, in the past, when we've come out of a situation where it's soft demand, you know, and everything goes back to a more normal period, airlines usually have airfare sales to get people spending money. You know, doesn't mean that'll happen again, but that's what we've seen in the past. But once we get back into a more, quote, normal, unquote, environment, then I think the more typical airline pricing policies and strategies will apply. Airfares will go up as demand increases.
Thanks so much. Appreciate all the info. Henry Hartevelt, he's a travel industry analyst, founder of Atmosphere Research Group. He's joining us on Travel Tuesday.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Huge job losses due to COVID-19 are putting homeowners trying to pay their mortgage in peril. We welcome back to the show Rick Sharga, CEO of C.J. Patrick Company, based in Orange County, California. The website, cjpatrick.com. Rick, a lot of people out of work, a lot of people maybe making less money, even if they are still working, and that presents a problem at mortgage time.
It sure does, and April is the first month where this will become a factor for a lot of the people whose income has been affected by COVID-19. May will probably be a little bit worse. We've had 10 million almost new jobless claims in the last 2 weeks, so it could be a real problem.
So is there help for people? I'm thinking if they've had that drop in income, do they just call the mortgage company and say, hey, can you work with me here? Are there ways that they can get help?
Yeah, there actually is some good news on this front. The federal government passed something called the CARES Act, and what that does is allow a borrower whose income has been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic to automatically qualify for a forbearance program. What a forbearance program means is that the lender will allow them to defer payments for a period of time, and the program, when it comes to government-backed loans, allows for up to 180 days for that first forbearance period, 6 months, and then the borrower can qualify again for an additional 180 days. Two important things to note about that. One is that a forbearance is not the same as having your debt eliminated. What it basically does is defer those payments. So you still owe the money, you just don't have to make the payments right away. And the second is this program in particular is only for government-backed loans. So it's a loan that's backed by Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, the FHA, the Veterans Administration, or USDA. So loans that aren't part of that pool, and that's probably about 40% of the loans out there, you still have to work with your specific mortgage company to see what kind of programs they have.
So is that something people should be calling their lenders to find out if that's the type of loan they have?
Yeah, the best way, usually the best way to do that is to call your mortgage servicer, and that's the company that sends you your monthly mortgage bill, and they're required to let you know what's going on. The problem is with the forbearance program, there have already been over 700,000 people that have called in looking for some help. The wait time on the calls is getting to be over 20 minutes. So it's getting harder to reach those mortgage servicers. If you go to the Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac websites, there's also a place where you can look up your loan to see if it is one of the loans that's owned by them. But in the end, you're still going to have to get in touch with your mortgage servicer to put the forbearance program in place and to get the details on how you're going to have to repay those loans, even if you do qualify for forbearance. And that's an important consideration, too, because some of the programs call for a balloon payment, which means at the end of the forbearance program, you're going to owe all that money back at the same time.
And this is probably a word of encouragement to people who may feel awkward placing that call to call the mortgage company, maybe pride, that sort of thing. Just an encouragement. Hey, you know, go ahead and do it. Get the help if you need it.
Anybody who needs the help, I would really, really urge to take advantage of this program. And it's important to reach out before you're delinquent so that the lender knows what your situation is. Nothing to be embarrassed about. This is a great program the government's put in place. Equally important, if you can pay your mortgage and don't gum up the works by trying to get in on this program at the expense, perhaps, of people who can't get through because you're kind of gaming the system. So it's important for people who aren't being affected to let the people who are being affected take full advantage of the program.
Thank you so much. Really good insight, Rick Sharga. He is CEO of C.J. Patrick Company in Orange County, California. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, just go to the stream and rewind. You can do that on the radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.